I'm going to walk you through some slides, and the hardest thing in putting this together was what to leave out, because I wanted to put a lot in, and I did, and I kept cutting back. And I decided rather than trying to cover everything very superficially, I would really focus on a few things more in depth. And what I want you to take away is that creation is completely different than evolution. They are not the same in any way. And anything in between is contradictory. You can't have both. It's one or the other. Now, I'm not dealing with the stuff in the middle. I was going to do that, but I took 10 slides out because I couldn't cover them. That could be another whole presentation or two or three. So anyhow, let's get going. I could not find my copy of Darwin's book on the origin of species. I was going to bring it in to show you how tiny it is. It's not very big, and yet it's had a tremendous impact. In fact, the complete title, most people don't know it. This is the complete title of his book. And what I want to point out is the last part of this, on the origin of species by means of natural selection. That's what most people know, because that's on the book cover. But the rest of it is, or the preservation of favored races in the struggle for life. Okay? And I'm going to talk about that in a second. His book was actually misnamed. It's not about the origin of species, it's the survival of existing species. It's a misnamed book to start with. He got away with that. How, I don't know. I wasn't there. Anyhow, the second part of the title, favored races, that has influenced the eugenics movement, which led to the sterilization of people deemed to be less worthy of being alive. It led to Margaret Sanger's forming of Planned Parenthood, which is performing all those abortions. It led to Hitler. He read the book by Darwin, and his final solution was to get rid of subhumans called Jews, because they were not a favored race. In the 20th century alone, there have been over 100 million mass murders committed by people who believed in evolution. Hitler, Stalin, Lenin, Pol Pot, you can go down the list. Idi Amin. They basically were evolutionists because they did not value human life, okay? Survival of the species. There have been 1.5 billion abortions in the world. 1.5 billion. I may have taken this slide out. Let me see. I took it out. But if you want to know, there's something called the abortion counter. And it actually counts abortions as they're happening around the world. And you can go on the internet and look it up. I had a slide, and while I was doing a screen capture, about 10 abortions occurred. I mean, it's incredible. All over the world, because of evolution. Okay, here's a basic question. Which came first, the chicken or the egg? How many think the chicken came first? Okay, how many think the egg came first? Ooh, let's try that again. How many think the chicken came first? Don't be afraid, put your hands. How many think the egg came first? Okay, well, let's see what the Bible says. God, in his infinite wisdom, created all things to reproduce only their own kinds, not to evolve into another species or a different kind. All throughout Genesis, at least 10 times the word kind appears. Kind, kind, kind. I'm not going to read it to you because you've all seen it. If you go a little further on in Genesis, again, kind, kind. A little further. Kind, 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 kind. At least 10 times. So what is God telling us? We didn't evolve. He created kinds. Okay? So why are we different? Okay? Why are we different? I'm going to come back to that later. Okay, so the chicken came first. And it had the built-in, God-given, God-created, God-designed capability of laying eggs. Now, how do we know that? Any thinking person could have figured this out. Do you see this egg there, the inside of the egg? See that little place right there? Sorry, I'm so nervous. Do you see that? That's called the air space. Have any of you ever hard-boiled an egg?
Yes.
You crack it from that end. That's the end that you can crack to get your fingernail in or your butter knife or whatever. Okay? Now, God didn't design it so we could eat hard-boiled eggs. He designed that egg with 12 different parts, which had to all come into existence at the same time. They could not have evolved gradually over time. They had to all come into existence at the same time, fully functioning, to have an egg. But if you didn't have that little egg sac right there, the little chick would not have enough air to breathe until it could peck its way out of the egg. It would have died before it got out. Okay? Every single part of that egg is there for a reason. Have any of you ever squeezed an egg? Not a hard-boiled egg, just an egg. You can squeeze it as hard as you want and you can't break it. I was going to do a demo, but I decided not to. Anyhow, so the point I'm trying to make here is God designed into each created kind of plant and animal. The created kind has the ability to produce only its own kind, not a new species. And we can do, but how do you get these variations? There's two ways. We can either breed variations or they can occur naturally. Now let's take a look at breeding them. You see that big watermelon there? That weighs 110 pounds. My grandmother was the oldest of about 11 children. So when her mom died, she literally raised her siblings. She was called Aunt Mag by their kids. My grandmother was a wonderful lady, lived to be 102. Well, one of her brothers was Uncle Tommy. Her brother was Tommy. He owned a farm, and he raised dairy cows and corn and watermelons. So what he would do is every year, he would give the seeds from the best melons to the family with the understanding we would save the seeds and give them back to Uncle Tommy. He'd plant them, give them back next year, and pretty soon he had a 110-pound watermelon. It wasn't mealy, it was a wonderful watermelon. He bred that. It didn't happen by chance. Okay? I'm sure you've seen lots of variations of dogs. A rose is a rose is a rose. There's lots of rose varieties. Lots of horse varieties, pig varieties, chicken varieties. How do you get all those varieties? God designed into every created kind the genetic capability to reproduce another chicken from a chicken, a dog from a dog, a horse from a horse. Okay? You don't get a new species or a new kind. Never will. How many have heard of the Human Genome Project? Only a few. I could spend a whole presentation just on this alone. I think the funding for this was like $3 billion, and it kept going up because they kept discovering new things. What they were trying to do is look at our genetic code in every living thing and to compare all the genetic codes. And so what they found is that chickens have a genetic code that's 60% similar to the human genetic code. How many think we evolved from a chicken? We're 60% like the chicken according to our genetic code. I mean, common sense would tell you we couldn't come from a chicken. Come on. There's 93 varieties of chickens. Chickens only produce chickens, but varieties of chickens. Bananas. How many think we came from a banana? How many think a banana produced a chicken? Okay, there's 60% commonality in the genetic code. It's like the basic building blocks of life. Chimpanzees, woo, now we're getting close. This is what I want to point out here. Francis Collins, who was the head of the Human Genome Project, was a theistic evolutionist. He believed God used evolution to bring about life. and he called it BioLogos. That's his claim to fame, BioLogos. But I could have spent hours on that, but I decided not to. What I want to point out here is this. You can always tell living evolutionary relatives. Anytime you see the word evolution, your ears should perk up. What are they trying to tell me that isn't true? Okay? Now the fact is, and this is the fact, the genetic similarity is 96%. But that doesn't mean we evolved from a chimpanzee. There are two types or varieties of chimps, apparently. Okay, human beings. How many have ever known identical twins? Identical twins. How many? Were they the same? Even though they're identical, were they the same? No, there's variation even in identical twins. How does variation happen in human beings? Well, here's how. Okay, it goes back to how God designed in our genetic capability to produce variations. So, if you look at this, each human has 3 billion genetic building blocks. Think of that, 3 billion. Right alone, that tells you that could not have happened by chance. Okay, can you imagine how long that would take to get 3 billion genetic building blocks? 0.1%, very small percentage. See, that's the difference here and there, 0.1%. 0.1% are unique to me, to you, to you, to you, to you, to you, to you. Okay? That makes us unique as a human being. But bottom line, we are all one race. All one race. And that's the way God designed us. You know, let's move on here. I tell you, God is so awesome and wise. It's just a human being could not have made God up. You just couldn't have. I could have picked any of his attributes to talk about. A whole message just on that. But let's just look at a few of them. Okay. Male and female. Have you ever asked yourself why he created a male and a female? Why do you need two? Him and her. Well, God knows the answer, and I'm going to tell you in a few minutes. It takes a male and a female to reproduce the humankind. Okay? Now, how does this happen? Males have a Y chromosome. Females have an X chromosome. I will always have a Y chromosome. If I had a sex change, surgery, they cannot remove the Y chromosome from my genes. Remember, I've got 3 billion of them. Okay, how are they going to remove it? They can't. I will always have the Y chromosome. I'll always be a male. And a female will always be a female. Okay, it doesn't matter if they prefer transgender something or other or do a sex reassignment. You can't change the way we were created. Again, I could spend a lot of time on DNA. And I'm not trying to confuse you. I'm trying to unconfuse you. Okay, so what I want to say here, his, hers, okay? So think of it this way. Female, male. Okay? We each have 23 chromosomes. Half of hers, half of his come together and wrap around each other and create a double helix to give you a new person that's some of her and some of him. Okay? That's why you don't marry your brother or sister. Because you're too similar. That's why Cocker Spaniels are the dumbest dogs. They keep interbreeding Cocker Spaniels. Okay, they don't bring in any new genetic information. Okay, that's why they're so dumb. Any purebred dog is dumber more by and large than a dog that isn't purebred. Okay, so now this complexity could not have evolved. It had to be designed in at the beginning. This is just another picture of this. This is what it actually looks like right here. Now, here's the point. See, if all the DNA in your body, my body, were placed end to end, It would stretch from here to the moon 500,000 times. That's how much there is in each person. It gets even better. If we took the DNA from one cell of every human being that's ever lived, just from one cell, remember we got lots of cells, from one cell, the DNA, and piled it all together, it would be the size of an aspirin. An aspirin. All the people who ever lived, their DNA from one cell is the size of an aspirin. That's how awesome our God is, to have designed all that in. They could not have evolved. Okay, God created us in His image and His likeness, Imago Dei. Now, why is that important? Remember, God knows what He's doing here. It's because we have human complexity. Where do we get this from? We get it from God, in His likeness. God is complex. Like I said, I could have talked about any attributes of God as part of this message, and I couldn't do them all, so you'll see the ones I've chosen. I'm going to go over some of these in detail. Well, let's just start at the bottom here. We have a soul. You know, Jesus said, what does it profit a man to gain the whole world, lose his soul? We have a soul. Nothing else does. How did we get it? From God. And human worth, you know, we value human worth. Do not murder. And so on. We have free will. A lot of people say, well, why didn't God create us so we don't sin, so we don't kill, so we don't do all these negative things? Well, if we didn't have free will, we couldn't freely choose to love God. God wants us to love Him. Can you imagine being married to someone who was forced to marry you? You know, they didn't freely say, I do, or I will. You know, God knew what He was doing. He gave us conscious awareness, but I want to talk about the ones on the left side a bit, so let's move on. I used to teach a course on intelligence, and back when research started to be done around 1896 by Francis Galton, who was the cousin of Darwin, by the way, and a eugenics proponent, let's sterilize imbeciles so they don't breed more imbeciles. I could spend days on this. Anyhow, so over time, different researchers have tried to identify what is intelligence. And no one really knows, okay? It's too complex. But the reason I have this up here is not to teach you about it, but to show you how complex it is. 150 different kinds of intellect. If you take the Scholastic Aptitude Test or the Stanford-Binet Intelligence Test or any test of achievement or intelligence, usually there's a verbal and a mathematical. And for a long time, we thought that's what intelligence was, verbal and mathematical. It's much more complex than that. Okay? So again, I used to teach all this stuff, but I don't have the time to do that here. What I want to emphasize, it is so complex, it could not have evolved. It had to be created. We have the ability to think logically, deductively. Nothing else can do that but us. So, for example, how does this work? A is different than not A. I mean, it's as simple as that. This is one of the takeaways I want you to take away. Creation is not evolution. They're different. Okay, male is different than female. Man is different than woman. Y is different than X. We've already gone over that. And always will be different. It cannot be changed. So staying with this idea of logic, which only we have, animals don't have it. Okay, you've probably heard of the concept of thesis and antithesis. Okay, opposites. Okay, now sometimes logically they'll say, let's try to get a synthesis. Take a thesis and an antithesis and let's try to get a synthesis. Well, that's what the people are trying to do that are trying to say there's something between evolution and creation. There's a synthesis. There's not. They are logically contradictory. They cannot be reconciled. They cannot be compromised. Logically, it's impossible. So we have the concept of supernatural, which is different than natural, and better, because supernatural includes natural, but more of it. It's supernatural. Okay? Natural leaves out anything super. It's different. Creation is different than evolution. Christ is different than antichrist. Jesus said, if you're not for me, you're against me. It's a simple decision. It's a logical choice. It's A or not A. Okay? This is one of the takeaways here. What is A and what is not A? Some more logic. Everything which has a beginning, and everything began, had a cause. Something caused the beginning. Okay, the universe has a beginning, therefore the universe has a cause. Now we believe the cause is the Creator. A little later I'll show you some slides where they don't say so. Okay, but what they say isn't logical. And therefore it couldn't happen. Evolution, and this is the point I'm trying to make here, evolution has no cause. Everything depends on random chance. No cause. Some more deductive logic. This is really important. We have it, nothing else does. In fact, up until 1997, when IBM created Deep Blue, you remember the computer that played chess against the Russian chess champion, Garry Kasparov? He was unbeatable. In fact, in 1996, he won 4-2. Do you see that? 4-2. Because this is the red. He's red. 1997, they beefed up the computer programming, and Big Blue just barely beat him. Okay, how did that program in the computer get there? Did that evolve by chance? No, it was intelligently designed by a human being. Okay? That computer is no smarter than the person who programmed it. Okay? And we're no smarter than the God who designed us. Okay? Some of this is just common sense. About two summers ago, Marilyn and I and some people from our other church went to hear Raymond Damanian. He was at UVic. He invented the MRI. Have any of you ever been into an MRI? It's that little thing there you can barely get into. A tube, anybody been in? Okay. Well, he was an atheist. An atheist until he invented the MRI and began to look at brain slices. Okay, it takes very tiny brain slices. And he realized this could not have happened by chance. It had to be designed by God. So, in 1957, he became a born-again Christian. And here's what his wife Donna says. Raymond had great faith in the Lord, and that, with his help, he'd be able to achieve his goal of developing the MRI. It has helped so many people. The MRI. Okay, personalities. I used to teach a course on personality, so I have a whole book on it. I could have gone through that. But I just picked something I thought most of you would have heard of. Now, why this isn't showing up, I don't know. But every year, 2.5 million people take the Myers-Briggs type indicator. Have any of you ever taken that? There we go, okay. I was trying to press the pointer. Okay, 2.5 million people take the Myers-Briggs type indicator every year. Have any of you taken it? Okay, I still don't know what this means. I cannot remember. It's not intuitive. So I don't use it for that reason. The other thing is it tells you your type, which doesn't change. And the work I do, I'm trying to get people to develop. So I created my own version. And I've used this probably with 20,000 or more people. I'll just give you a couple of examples here. Because what I want people to do is to identify where they are, what is their general style of functioning, and then how can you vary that to work better with other people. Let me give you some examples. See Turner Construction right there? When I worked with them, they were America's biggest construction company. Have any of you ever been to Universal Studios? They designed that. They built it. Okay. They were getting lots of new business, which meant they needed project managers to run the projects, and they needed leaders to oversee everything. So the CEO asked me to help them with a mentoring program. And the best part of the program was what you're seeing right here. Because I did four trainings in four cities with about 25 mentor-protege pairs in each city. Without exception, every single protege scored highest on results. Build it on time, build it on budget, I'll be successful. Thank you very much. You can promote me now. Without exception, their mentor said, whoa, I used to be like that. That doesn't work. I'm going to mentor you to help you learn to work with the highly analytic bankers who watch every dollar we spend, to work with the highly creative architects who keep redesigning projects, and to work with the politicians who want to get reelected, and so they're interested in feelings. Because if you can't work with these three types, I can't use you on the project. Okay, that was the turnaround there. Shell Oil, let me give you another quick example. Shell Oil. Marilyn and I worked on that one together. We were down in Borneo, it's part of Malaysia, for 2 or 3 weeks. And the reason we were called in is because, as you know, Shell is a Dutch-British company. And so what they would do is they would fly in the expatriates who were results-oriented to work with the indigenous people who were feeling-oriented. Okay? So the expats came in thinking, we're going to shape them up, get more productivity, better results. And so they were very bossy from the point of view of the indigenous people, who would nod their heads and then not do it. They were passive-aggressive. This was the turnaround for them. I could give lots of examples. But the point is, God has designed us so we can have some flexibility, some variation. You know, becoming born again, we're not just stuck where we are. Let me just say about husbands and wives. Okay, these are diagonal opposites here. How many think you married your diagonal opposite? God has a sense of humor, doesn't he? Opposites attract. Good luck. I won't go into more of that except to say God has a sense of humor. If you saw the movie Jerry Maguire, do you remember when he knew he loved her? You complete me. None of us have all of that. Remember the first Rocky movie? He's out on the ice with Adrian. He's walking her around, and she says, "What do you see in me? Your gaps fit my gaps." Do you remember that? In the first Rocky movie? It won Best Picture. It was a great movie. Okay. Again, on the theme, creation incompatible with evolution. We have a Bible. You've got yours, I've got mine. We all have our Bibles. Our Bible began to be written 3,500 years ago. Okay? It was finished about 2,000 years ago. So for about 1,500 years, the Bible was being written. 1,500 years by 40 writers who wrote 66 different books, all of which don't contradict each other. Okay? God inspired that. That didn't happen by chance. Okay? There are no errors in this. They're now finding from archaeology that the places, the names, the events, all happened. When I used to read Leviticus and Numbers and so on, I used to think, why on earth, and the genealogies, why on earth is all this in here? In his wisdom, God knows at some point they're going to discover all the stuff that's in the Bible. Okay? This is the record back then. inspired by God. It wasn't made up. Think about this. It has been precisely copied. If you go on the internet and look up how the Hebrews copied the Old Testament, they had very strict standards. Very strict. And it's been preserved. Think about this. It's been preserved. And it's unchanging. Okay, our God is the who behind everything. Our God is the who that designed what, how he did it, when he did it, and why. All of that. He's been involved in the creation, the fall, the redemption, the restoration. That's all part of his story. Think of it this way. History, as we know it, is his story about us. It's not our story, it's his story about us. In contrast, Darwin's theory is impossible, it's unproven, it depends on random chance. They use unknowns to explain unknowns and get away with it. There's no evidence for it. I've got book after book that refutes evolution. It's now being called a fact, not a theory, because they're claiming it's been proven, but it hasn't. You've heard of missing links in the fossil record. They never happened. They'll always be missing. Never were there. They'll always be missing. Goo to you, I'll talk about that. And there's no ultimate cause because it's anti-theistic. Okay, so what evolution focuses on really is the what. What happened, supposedly. And they put in time, which they don't know for sure. And they put in some how, which they don't know for sure. They think it's random chance and mutations, but they don't know for sure. Because you can't control a mutation. But there's no who or why in evolution. Life is meaningless, without purpose, no direction. It just happened. Okay, so how did Darwin come up with this preposterous theory? Okay, these are the Galapagos Islands. Quite a few of them. And so Darwin went to the different islands, and what he discovered, there were finches on the islands, and they had different beaks. Now, if they were on an island where they had to eat nuts, they tended to have beaks like this, so they could survive by eating nuts. If they were on an island where there were a lot of insects that they had to peck out of wood, they probably had a beak like that one, so they could get the insect. If they didn't have the right beak for the right food, guess what? They became extinct. Survival of the fittest. So that's how he came up with this. Okay? And this occurred naturally. He said natural conditions caused this to happen over time. He did not see it happening. He wasn't there. He just saw the result of the beaks. So, here's how he did it. His theory is actually a theory of macroevolution. Macro, and I'm going to explain that. What he saw were variations. Okay, and God created in finches the capability of having these variations. We've already gone over this. Okay, but he's an atheist, so he didn't acknowledge God. So he explains it through natural selection. Okay? And then he made a leap. He said, if we get variations, maybe over long periods of time, there are gradual variations that produce new species. That's macroevolution. Now, the neo-Darwinists around the 1920s and 30s stepped forward and said, hey, we've got enough research. It's a fact. It's not a theory. It's now a fact. And they added mutations to support what they were saying. And none of this is true. None of it's true. In fact, in 1980, 150 evolutionists got together and examine the difference between microevolution and macroevolution, and they concluded macroevolution cannot happen. It cannot happen. And yet that is what's being perpetrated. Okay, why is this important? I don't have a slide for Canada, but I bet it's similar. In the USA, 58% of Americans believe we got here through evolution, either directly through evolution alone or God used evolution. 58%. And that's consistent over about 40 years. Okay, it hasn't changed much. Okay, the question, can you be a person of faith and be a scientist? And the answer is yes. All of the early scientists, all the pioneers and scientists were believers in the God of the Bible. They wanted to understand God's creation, how he designed it, what is the order in his creation. And so they did research on it. Why? Because they believed this. That since the creation of the world, God's invisible qualities, his eternal power and divine nature, have been clearly seen. It's out there. Now, if you don't believe it's out there, you're not going to look for it. But they believed it, and so they discovered what became all of the branches of science. For example, Galileo explored the heavens, and he said, "The glory and greatness of Almighty God are discerned in the open book of the heavens." Francis Bacon discovered the scientific method. Even if you are a New Ager, a Hindu, a Muslim, doesn't matter what you believe, if you do science, you're going to use the scientific method that was developed by believers in God. You cannot do science without the foundation that these pioneers set in place because of their belief in the God of the Bible. Even Isaac Newton, sometimes said to be the most brilliant man ever. He said the most elegant system of the sun, planets, and comets could not have arisen without the design and domain of an intelligent and powerful being. He wrote more about God than he did about mathematics and physics. That's how much he believed in God. It's incredible. And most of us don't know this because it's not taught. I bet you don't know this. 85% of the Nobel Prize winners since 1901 in the sciences have been Christians or Jews. 85%. Only 10% are atheists, 1% are Muslims. And yet Muslims comprise about 25% of the world's population. So this is interesting. 129 Jews make up 2.02% of the world's population, okay, won Nobel Prizes in science. Only 3 Muslims won Nobel Prizes in science. If it was proportional, there would have to be almost 150,000 Muslims winning Nobel Prizes in science to match what the Jews have done. God has truly blessed all nations through Abraham. He has fulfilled his promise. I mean, just look at this. Israel is the second most entrepreneurial country in the world after the USA. More inventions and so on. It's incredible what they're doing over there. A little country called Israel. Why? Because of the Bible. Because of their it's built into their character to learn and explore and question. But all within a theistic framework. Okay, now, I mentioned God's attributes. I could have picked anything, but I thought the three omnis were worth taking a look at. God is all-knowing or omniscient. He knows the past, present, and the future. He's like an omniscient author. Have any of you ever written anything? Something long. Okay, did your characters take over at some point and go in a different direction? As the omniscient author, you kind of have to know how it's going to start, how it's going to progress, how it's going to end. Well, God knows all of that. He's like an omniscient author. He's outside of the book. He's outside of human history because he created it all. Okay, omnipresent. He's been there the whole time. and omnipotent, he intervenes. When Rod Ellis was here, he talked about Chronos time, which is this, and Kairos time. Kairos is where God intervenes in his story. I've just written a romance novel, and it's about God winks, how God intervenes in the lives of some people seeking romance, if you can imagine that. God's attributes have to match his actions, or he would contradict himself, and God can't do that. He can't lie to himself, he can't contradict himself. And he can't do things that are illogical. He can't make a square into a circle, or 2 + 2 = 5, or anything illogical, because he's created it the way it's supposed to be. And he cannot direct anything undirected. That would be a contradiction. You can't direct something that's undirectable. So, we know omnipotent God intelligently designed and sustains and intervenes in his creation. Okay? We believe that. If that's true, how could he be in control of random chance mutations and survival of the fittest? He can't. He can't be in control of something that's uncontrollable. Okay, we know he designed everything to be good. So if he designed it to be good, then how would he prevent unforeseen, chaotic, random chance things from happening, according to evolution? And omnipresent God. If he's omnipresent, where did he go when evolution was happening? Did he take a break? Where did he go? It just doesn't make sense. The two opposing worldviews we've been talking about are theism and naturalism. Theism is based on the God of the Bible and his story, and you can see here some of the main people in his story. We could do whole teachings on any of these, like with Joseph, for example. Do you know most of Genesis is about the story of Joseph? If you remember when Joseph finally realized, when he meets his brothers, what you meant for evil, God meant for good. That's how he got his people to Egypt, so they didn't starve. Okay? God was in control of it all. Okay? I could teach on this forever. Because every one of these has a story. But we don't have time for that. Most of you probably don't know this, but there's over 100 universal constants that all have to have come into existence at the same time, function properly the first time, and all work together at the same time in order to have the universe and life and so on. If it didn't all happen at the same time, we wouldn't be here. And I just put some that you know, like the velocity of light. The velocity of light is a constant. I think it's 186,287 miles per hour. It's a constant. It doesn't change. Without the constant, Einstein couldn't have done all his work. Newton's law of gravitation. It doesn't just apply to apples falling from a tree. It's what explains how the planets don't bombard into each other. Okay? It's the gravitational attraction. It's why the moon does what it does. Why we have tides and it's all done by design. It's not random. And then everything's made up of neutrons and protons. They have to have just the right ratio of mass, or they wouldn't function. Every one of these constants, and if you're interested, go on the internet, they're all listed. And it tells you if it's too much, this is what happens. If it's too little, this is what happens. And the variation is so tiny, they're finely tuned by God, not by chance. And they all had to come into existence at the same time and function all together at the same time, or we would not have what we have, the universe and everything in it. Atheists cannot explain any of this. So how does all of this end up influencing us? It's because there are certain icons of evolution that are perpetrated on us in the textbooks and by professors. And these are some of them. I would really encourage you to get hold of these two books, Icons of Evolution and Zombie Science. They're good reads. They're written for anybody to read. You don't have to be a scientist. They're written by a scientist, but anybody can read them. And I'm just going to pick a few things to talk about here. How many of you have heard of Darwin's Tree of Life? Anybody heard of that? Okay, well, let me get a quick history on that. In 1837, Darwin sketched out his initial tree of life. When he wrote his book in 1859, he incorporated the tree of life into it. Notice there's no life on the branches of this tree. It's just a tree. Because he didn't know what to put on the branches. But guess what? Other people came after him and said, hey, why don't we put some primitive men up here and some other things? And you can find all kinds of trees of life, all based on evolution. None of them exist. They're all made up. And whatever they put on a branch was just put there. They don't know if it goes there or not. Here's another icon that we've been bilked with. How many of you have seen something that looks like this, where an ape suddenly becomes a human? Okay? How many watch the National Geographic channel on TV? It is evolutionary. Evolutionary. I used to live in Virginia. I belonged at one time to the Smithsonian Institution. They actually have this in the Smithsonian, okay, where they have taken what they think was the progression from ape to human, and around this imagined image, they've created models that never existed to show you that they did exist, but they never did. How many of you have heard of some of the primitive men here? Piltdown man, Nebraska man, and so on. Here's a really interesting one here. Again, I could spend time on all of this. They found an extinct pig's tooth. Pig's tooth, one tooth. And around that, they created this guy here. Okay? A model that looks like this guy. Now, this guy existed. He was a pygmy. They forced him to go into the Bronx Zoo as an example of a transition from a primitive to a more human. So he actually existed, encaged in a cell. All the rest were made up, all of them. Oh, they've discovered now that Peking man and Neanderthal were humans. In fact, in the Human Genome Project, they've traced it back, and there's definite Neanderthal in the DNA. They now know that. And then Lucy, you know, famous Lucy, she was a gorilla. Oh, this was a real biggie here. A guy named Ernst Haeckel believed in evolution, and he tried to promote it publicly. And the way he did it, he created these drawings. He created them, imagined them, okay? And they're still being shown in textbooks. But here's the real thing. He drew in gills. See the little gills there? See, here's a fish that has gills. Salamander doesn't have gills. A turtle doesn't have gills. A chicken doesn't have gills. A rabbit doesn't have gills. A human doesn't have gills. But he drew them in so people would think we evolved from fish that gave rise to this and that. And okay, you see how they dupe us? All made up, all fabricated. Oh, this is the famous goo to you experiment. What they were trying to do here, Clarence mentioned this, but let me go into it a little more detail. What they did is they put some gases in here. Now, what they left out was oxygen. You know what we breathe in? Oxygen. Without oxygen, there's no life. You know what plants breathe out? CO2. We breathe in there. They breathe out oxygen. We breathe it in. We breathe out CO2. They breathe it in. Isn't that a well-designed cycle? Could that have evolved? Anyhow, so the first thing they did wrong is they didn't put any oxygen in here. If they had, it would have exploded. It would have burnt up. They couldn't have done this. This was all intelligently designed, this apparatus. Okay? It didn't just put itself together in the lab. Someone designed it. And so the way it was supposed to work, the gas mixture is supposed to go up, get a charge, an electrical charge, get reduced and come out down here as an organic compound. So you're going from non-life to life. You know what they found? Tar. Goo. They didn't find you. There is no goo to you. It was all, this is still in the textbooks. That's how we got here, goo to you. It didn't exist. It's not possible. Darwin was a true scientist in the sense he had a theory, and he called it a theory that could be disproved. And I'm going to show you two slides of what he said. If it could be demonstrated that any complex organ existed which could not possibly have been formed by numerous, successive, slight modifications. You get that? I'll do it again. Numerous, successive, slight modifications. My theory would absolutely break down. This is the human eye. See how complex that is? That could not have evolved. The fossil record. Darwin said this in Origin of Species. Innumerable transition forms must have existed. He doesn't say they exist, must have existed. But why do we not find them embedded in countless numbers in the crust of the earth? They haven't found them. They didn't find them in Darwin's time, and they haven't found them since then. Surely geology surely does not reveal any such finely graduated organic chain. And this is perhaps the greatest objection that can be urged against my theory. Nothing in the fossil, no transitional records. If you have evolving species, you don't just go from this to this. There's transitions. Okay? They've never found a transition from this species to this. No transitions in the fossil record. Those are the missing links. Here's another problem. Most people don't know it, but what you see here was fabricated. It does not exist. Somebody sat down and drew this and then decided, okay, let's name these something and then let's put what we think evolved. Okay? Now, here's the problem. Not only was it made up, but the Cambrian period down here is where 90% of life exploded, came into existence at once. So you would expect a lot of transitional fossils in here. You don't have any. Nothing. Have any of you ever watched the show Cosmos by Carl Sagan? It was a popular TV show. Okay, here's Carl. I don't know why he's smiling. He made a lot of money off this. He said the cosmos is all that is or was or ever will be. In other words, it's always existed. Always existed. And matter is all that matters. But here's the problem. What was physical matter before it became physical matter? What was it? How do you get physical matter from something, from nothing? So physical matter can't produce moral laws, can't produce the logic that we went over, can't produce time, space, and energy. These are all abstract. It can't produce the abstract laws of physics and math. It just can't do it. No matter how hard or long it tries, it will never do it. You've heard of the Big Bang. Again, I could spend a lot of time on this. The point to take away is this. See here? So what supposedly happened is somewhere about 13.7 to 13.8 to 20 billion years ago, they don't know, something happened. And the universe came into existence. And the earth came into existence about 4.5 billion years. And so on and so on and so on. So, but the problem is nothing can't produce something. Logically, it's impossible. That's why I spent so much time on the logic side. It's just impossible. And yet they claim that nothing became everything, that nothing became matter and energy, that nothing became time and space, nothing became all that complex DNA, the genetic code that we looked at, remember his and hers and all that, and nothing became alive, and none of that is possible. So this is, how are we doing for time?
We're about 10 minutes over now.
So are we over?
If we have room for a couple of minutes of questions.
Okay, well, let's skip this. That's a summary. Okay, I want to leave you with this. This isn't mine. I got this from Adrian Rogers. He comes on Carrie 550 AM radio every morning at 6 AM. One morning I was going to a men's Bible study at 6 o'clock in the morning, and he was on the radio, and I heard it, and it just stuck. Birth forms you, sin deforms you, school informs you, prison reforms you, the world conforms you, only Jesus transforms you.
Amen.
Okay? That's not evolution. Do we have time to I've been turned off.
I don't know who did that to you. Are you still working? Do you have another slide?
I was going to read the solitary, one solitary man.
Yeah.
Well, solitary life.
We should be able to go to that slide. Just try the button again. There you go.
No. Oh, is it on?
Yep.
Okay. Have any of you heard of this, One Solitary Life, about Jesus? I mean, think about the words of this. He was born in an obscure village, the child of a peasant woman, no standing. He grew up in another obscure village, where he worked in a carpenter shop, not glamorous, until he was 30, when public opinion turned against him, when he started his ministry. He never wrote a book, never held an office, never went to college, never visited a big city. He never traveled more than 200 miles from where he was born. He did none of the things usually associated with greatness. He had no credentials but himself. I am, I am, I am. He was only 33. His friends ran away. One of them, Peter, denied him. He was turned over to his enemies. And he went through the mockery of a trial, and he was nailed to a cross between two thieves. While dying, his executioners gambled for his clothing, and that was the only property he had, as you remember. And when he was dead, he was laid in a borrowed grave from Nicodemus. Joseph of Arimathea, through the pity of a friend. In 19 centuries, think of that, 19, well now 20 centuries have come and gone, and today Jesus is the central figure in the human race and the leader of mankind's progress. Our calendar is AD and BC. BC before Christ, AD in the year of our Lord, the world's calendar. All the armies that have ever marched, all the navies that have ever sailed, all the parliaments that have ever sat, and all the kings that ever reigned put together have not affected the life of mankind on earth as powerfully as that one solitary life. That was God's greatest intervention in his story.
That was powerful. That was beautiful.
Well, you know, as I was sitting listening to Dr. Bill Gray teaches, I was thinking, we are so blessed as a congregation. We have many wonderful, gifted leaders and teachers and people of the Word, people that love God. And, sir, you are an inspiring teacher and a very gifted communicator. And I would have loved to have sat in your class at UBC. My first class,
I was a budding paleontologist. I was keenly interested in rock collecting and fossils, and I remember my first class, Anthropology 100, and the professor said, does anyone have any questions, after she had gone to great lengths to explain the theory of evolution? And I said, I'm just confused. I said, the geological record is absolutely absent of any kind of transitional life fossils, and I'm just wondering how you could explain this complete and utter absence of transitional life forms in the geological record. She pointed at me and said, "You can leave right now," and she kicked me out of the class. That was in the McLaurin building, and there was probably a good 100 kids in there, so I was pretty embarrassed to get kicked out my first day of class. But what it said to me is that when you're dealing with a bias, evolution is a religion, and it's not operational science. And how two one-celled amoeba-like protozoans got together in a pool of primordial ooze and decided to erect the enormously complex DNA molecule, it doesn't happen in science. It can happen in laboratory, and how it happened by random, we have no idea. But what, you know, and I'm glad that Clarence isn't here today, because he would want to sign you up and take you on the road. It was great last week with Clarence, and you have again, just fortified everything that Clarence said today. And I'm hoping that Bill will come back. He's got some wonderful teaching on postmodern thought and also on Islam. And so we're going to look forward to having you come and teach those to us at another time. But what a wonderful day this has been, and thank you so much. Are there any questions that you wanted to ask? We're over time by about 15 minutes, and I know that some of you may have to go. But do you have any questions that you'd like to ask on the topic? Because we want to invite our music team to come and lead us. And yes?
Okay. It's pretty simple. But first of all, thank you, Bill. The word says, study to show thyself approved. It's very evident that you have studied scriptures, and you've studied a topic that opposes scripture, and God approves. But more than that, you have a heart that goes with it. It's yes. Just not all academic. It's a heart and a passion for God, and I so appreciate that. Yeah. But here's a question that some of us wonder about. Dinosaurs. Okay, we know now there's evidence of dinosaurs. They're all over. Alberta is full of them. However, we got the ark. Now, how does a dinosaur get on the ark? Bill?
Actually, is this on?
No, you've got your mic on.
Oh, it's here. Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, is it off?
Is his mic on, Tony?
Hello? 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 It's on. If you're interested in more on this, I would like to suggest the people that have some background, we maybe get together and maybe have a panel presentation and really go into this, because you could spend a time on the dinosaurs, the fossil record, cosmology, which is the universe, you know, the distant stars and starlight travel time and all that. I mean, there's tons of research on this, and there's no way I could deal with it today. As I said, what I'm trying to get across is A and not A, okay? Logically, you can't have both. It's either creation or it's evolution. And I don't think there's any evidence for evolution based on what science has found. There's no evidence. There's lots of propaganda, lots of icons that they put out there. So... no answer.
Yeah, I think.
No, they were on the ark. Yeah, but we're not going into that.
Okay.
Not the full size. The little ones. The little ones went on. Yeah. Not the big ones.
We have one question back here.
It's not really a question, but it really alludes to the fact when you went through this message that you brought forward, that when Netflix first sort of came online, one of the first series of movies that they had that were very, very telling was creatures that couldn't exist through evolution. And it was a Christian-based documentary about key creatures, insects, animals, mammals, that had to have all the bits and pieces
together at one time in order to be able to actually survive. There are bugs that mix two chemicals together to create an explosion to paralyze their prey. And if, through natural selection, that would have meant they would have exploded themselves in learning this practice of trying to make the perfect.
And plus, they had to have the prey to do this too.
Exactly, and so it was great. And then for some reason, Netflix removed it.
I think it was
the most telling, because literally after you read it, you know, there are birds with beaks that had to figure out, like, everything had to be created in order to function, or that creature or species would never have survived.
Yes.
And there was so much telling, and then Netflix took it away, and I was kind of like, that was my argument when I saw some of the information that you had up here. It's like, it's so clear that it has to be created. You can't evolve in so many of these ways and survive. Mutations don't provide a positive adaptation.
No. You usually lose information.
And you become less capable. And that's what we've seen throughout history and throughout medicine. So it's interesting that we've now flipped that around and tried to convince ourselves that mutations make us
better. See, we could do a whole presentation just on mutations.
Mm-hmm.
And so I
just thought bringing that up, it's something that we don't tend to talk about in church because we think about faith and spirituality. But when you really put where the rubber meets the road, and the reason why scientists have this passion, it's because it's crystal clear to them.
All of you have heard of bacteria that gets resistant to, say, penicillin or other things?
Superbugs.
Okay, those aren't new species. Those are variations of a mutation. But that's designed into the species, the created kind. So it can mutate, but it's the same kind. It's just a different variety of the kind. It's now resistant to the drug. And that's why you should always take your antibiotics to completion. Because if you don't take the whole thing, you're allowing them to start mutating and becoming superbugs.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Oh, one other thing I'd like to say. Mm-hmm. And again, we could spend some time on the particulars, but the two groups, well, the three groups, I guess, that are less likely to be evolutionists are the scientists who look at the heavens, because the more they see out there, they realize it could not have just happened. There is 96% of dark matter and dark energy used to explain the heavens. Well, it doesn't exist. 96% of what's out there is dark energy and dark matter. They made it up. Unknowns explain unknowns. So as they're discovering more of this, many of them are becoming believers in God. At the other end is the nanotechnology. Clarence mentioned that. They study the little things. Remember the bacterium he showed you?
Yeah. Michael.
The smaller the thing is and the complexity within that, it could not have evolved. Okay. And the other group that's moving away are the people in medicine. When doctors are operating on you, they're not thinking evolution. The human body is too complex. All the different systems, the organs. I had slides on the nerves and the arteries. I was going to go into all of that. I thought, no, Linda should do that. She's got a PhD in nursing. She used to teach nursing. And she could explain that backwards and forwards. We have, I think it's 27 miles of arteries in us? It's incredible how we are fearfully and wonderfully made. and we could talk about any of this as a separate thing.
Yes. So many ways to go on this, but I want to say, Bill, that, you know, with all the technical information that you brought us today, I think the most powerful statement is that Christological emphasis of one solitary life. All of these things can affect your life, but it's only Christ who can transform a life. And as we're studying the creation, I'll close with this. From Romans chapter 1, verse 20, you highlighted this verse, and I think we want to end on this. We'll have our music team come now and set up for our closing song. For since the creation of the world, his invisible attributes, his eternal power and divine nature have been clearly seen, being understood through what has been made, so that they are without excuse.
Right.
Thank you so much, Bill. We appreciate you. We appreciate your heart for Christ. So God bless you, and we look forward to another teaching session.